McGraw-Hill Ascent Audio presents The Pursuit of Excellence, The Uncommon Behaviors of the World's Most Productive Achievers by Ryan Hawk. Foreword by Patrick Lencioni. Narrated by Ryan Hawk. Dedication. To my grandpa, Dean Hawk, thank you for showing me what it means to be a leader. Forward. If you have only recently come to learn about Ryan Hawk, I suppose you could go listen to the over 400 interviews Ryan has generated for his award-winning podcast, The Learning Leader Show, and I'd recommend that. Another way to catch the spirit of the podcast is to listen to this book. In it, Ryan has distilled the wisdom he's learned from two sources: 7 years of interviewing some of the best leaders in the world, and thousands of hours of study and practice in his own life. When I first met Ryan on the Learning Leader Show, I was certain I had stumbled upon one of the most impressive leaders and teachers of leaders in the world. He doesn't come from New York City or Washington, D.C. or Silicon Valley. Ryan's from Dayton, Ohio, and he isn't enamored with title or status. He just wants all of us to be better, and he does that by giving us access to real-world, humble leaders who are in the trenches with their people, those who have learned how to lead through trial and error. Ryan Hawk certainly didn't know what his podcast would become when he posted his first episode 7 years ago. Or maybe he did. He's that kind of guy. But he couldn't have anticipated that he would bring so many people together to share their experiences in such a powerful way. This book is the culmination of that adventure in learning and teaching. Ryan has systematically observed the world's most excellent leaders and then assembled those observations into a toolkit outlining the actions and attitudes that drive achievement. This book is an absolute must-read if you care to live an excellent life. Having spent hours with Ryan on and off air, I'm inspired by his dedication to producing excellent work and pursuing excellence in his own life, all with an eye to serving the community he's worked so hard to build. Take the time to listen to this book and ask yourself how these words can make you a better leader and a better person right now. Thank you, Ryan, for bringing us this gem, The Pursuit of Excellence, from Patrick Lencioni, founder and CEO of The Table Group, best-selling author of The 5 Dysfunctions of a Team and The Advantage. Introduction. When not crashing their flying machine prototype into the sand dunes of Kitty Hawk, North Carolina, Orville and Wilbur Wright spent large swaths of time sitting on the beach watching birds and imitating their movements. At least that's how it appeared to the locals who took notice. "We couldn't help thinking they were just a pair of poor nuts," recounted Kitty Hawk resident John T. Daniels. "They'd stand on the beach for hours at a time just looking at the gulls flying, soaring, dipping. They would watch the gannets and imitate the movements of their wings with their arms and hands. They could imitate every movement of those gannets. We thought they were crazy. But we just had to admire the way they could move their arms this way and that and bend their elbows and wrist bones up and down and which way, just like the gannets." But what looked like a weird habit was actually Orville and Wilbur studying how to fly. What better model than birds? Wilbur filled pages of his notebook with drawings and observations about the differences among how buzzards, eagles, and hawks rode the air. "The buzzard," he wrote, "which uses the dihedral angle, finds greater difficulty to maintain equilibrium in strong winds than eagles or hawks, which hold their wings level. The hen hawk can rise faster than the buzzard, and its motion is steadier. It displays less effort in maintaining its balance. Hawks are better soarers than the buzzards, but more often resort to flapping because they wish greater speed. A damp day is unfavorable for soaring unless there is a high wind. No bird soars in a calm." In the margins next to his observations, Wilbur drew the different birds and their wing angles. he paid close attention to the subtle differences in wing inclination, center of gravity, and the fore and aft equilibrium that all factored into lift and flight. Orville explained it succinctly. Learning the secret of flight from a bird was a good deal like learning the secret of magic from a magician. In Dayton, Ohio, I grew up with the legacy of the Wright brothers, the fingerprints of civic pride in the turn-of-the-century Daytonians who unlocked the secret of powered human flight are everywhere. There is the series of National Aviation History Museum sites on Dayton's west side, the Wright brothers' family home and their bicycle shop, the places where their dreams and theories about flight took shape, the over 8,000 acres of Wright-Patterson Air Force Base encompassed the field on Dayton's east side where the brothers perfected their Wright Flyer after its historic first flight. Located next to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base is Wright State University. Drive through the center of Dayton's downtown and you will pass under a gorgeous piece of abstract art known as Flyover that traces the 150-foot-long and 43-foot-high flight path of the Wright brothers' first flight. Over the years, a methodology has emerged that drives my pursuit of excellence following this very same pattern. Just as the Wright brothers were fascinated by the movements of birds, I am fascinated by the stories behind personal and organizational excellence. Just as they took note of the most fundamental details of how birds moved their bodies to harness the forces of lift, I love distilling the examples of excellence in others down to their component parts. My goal is to understand why it happened. Was it intentional, deliberate action that caused the outcome, or was it luck? How did that result come about? What was the series of events that led to it? When I can identify the actions, behaviors, habits, routines, and rituals of those who sustain excellence, I implement them to see what works for me and what could work for others. This approach and that effort have culminated in the book you are now listening to. Success versus excellence. What's the difference between success and excellence? It's a question I hear often, and it's one I have asked myself and others many times. The person whose answer I find myself sharing with others the most is that of a high school basketball coach named Brooke Cupps. Brooke is the head basketball coach at my alma mater, Centerville High School. He coached the elite-level AAU team that featured both his own son, Gabe, and the son of LeBron James, LeBron James Jr. In 2021, he led Centerville to its first-ever state championship. Gabe was the leading scorer in the championship game. Over the past few years, Brooke has become one of my most valued friends because he embodies what it means to live true to your values. I have long been an admirer of how he does more than just teach basketball to the young people in his charge. He instills in them the lessons of leadership and specifically a thirst for excellence. When I asked Brooke what the difference is between success and excellence, he replied, "Success is based on a comparison with others. Excellence is measured against your own potential." His answer is so simple, yet so true. The only comparison I should be making is with myself. Will I be better tomorrow than I am today? Will I be more thoughtful, more intentional, more purposeful in the future than I am right now? Do my habits, routines, rituals, and actions match my intention to be better tomorrow than I am today? These questions are the gateway to excellence because living a life of excellence is about the fanatical pursuit of gradual improvement. I like the way author Darren Hardy describes the compounding effect of gradual improvement. It's the principle of reaping huge rewards from a series of small, smart choices, plus consistency, plus time equals a radical difference. Don't sacrifice the gift. Why not be satisfied with the attainable goal of success rather than opting for the hard road of continuous but never finished improvement? Why pursue excellence when winning can be had for less? The words of famed long-distance runner Steve Prefontaine accurately capture how I feel. To give anything less than your best is to sacrifice the gift. Steve Prefontaine set American records at every distance from 2,000 to 10,000 meters as he prepared for the 1976 Olympics. Known simply as Pre in the running world, he was renowned for setting an extraordinarily fast pace. He said, "A lot of people run a race to see who is fastest. I run to see who has the most guts, who can punish himself into an exhausting pace, and then at the end, punish himself more." This is a different way of viewing what a race is all about, as a test of yourself, not a means of comparing yourself to others. Can you be better this time than you were last time? What are you doing to intentionally improve yourself? That's what excellence is about. The primary comparison you should get in the habit of making is the one with your previous self. What are you doing to be better tomorrow than you are today? Who are you surrounding yourself with to ensure that? What habits are you creating to consistently improve over time? All these actions and thoughts come from intention and living with purpose. I won't say that this is the easiest way to live, but I think it's the most fulfilling. Always striving to do better is a challenge. I'm driven to meet that challenge. To not pursue excellence would feel like I'm wasting this wonderful opportunity I've been given. The pursuit of excellence is about maximizing my potential. The chase is about not just accepting the problems and struggles that are inevitable parts of life. It is about embracing them. Why not aggressively attack them? I'm fueled by feedback that what I do helps people. I'm motivated by positively impacting the lives of others, whether friends or complete strangers. I relish the challenge of helping high performers, people who are smarter than me, have already accomplished a lot, and have the titles to prove it. Accepting that challenge means showing up and doing it well. But embracing that challenge also means daring them to do the same and pushing them to aim higher. I feel a sense of responsibility to be excellent based on the fortunate circumstances into which I am grateful to have been born. As I've gotten older, I've realized just how fortunate I am to have been nurtured throughout my life by my parents, my brothers, my coaches, and great bosses. I wonder what I've done to deserve that. And yet, here I am with many people who believe in me. I love proving those people right. That's why I am committed to pursuing excellence. If I'm always trying to get better and that effort shows up in the results of my work, then I'm bound to be useful to others. If my work helps them, then that validates the investments in me of my supporters. I can't imagine not living this way. I love the thought that my work moves people to take action in their lives. To do that, I can't be satisfied with the goal of being great. I have to aim higher for excellence. That is what I want my life to be all about. The pursuit. A pursuit is a chase or quest for something. It's a word that comes from the Anglo-French poursuit, which means the act of pursuing or striving toward goals. Movement, action, effort, and exertion are all required elements of a pursuit. Author and leadership legend John Maxwell told me, "Action shows intention. Nobody ever wanted to follow me when I was sitting my butt in the sand. That's why I'm always moving." Pursuing excellence requires that same mindset, one that is biased toward action. It is the pursuit of getting better. It is not about the achievement of climbing a mountain. It is about climbing the next taller mountain. Without progress and growth, there is no life. Without endurance in the pursuit, there is no excellence. The pursuit of excellence is a form of what Simon Sinek calls an infinite game, one where there is no finish line, no practical end to the game, no such thing as winning, where the primary objective is to keep playing, to perpetuate the game. It is about pushing yourself beyond the edges of your zone of comfort and competency. Then once you adapt and establish a new horizon of what is comfortable, pushing yourself beyond it again and again and again. Why? In my first book, Welcome to Management, I focused on a very specific moment in one's journey of leadership. The transition from working as an individual contributor to leading as a just promoted first-time manager. That book was intended to serve as a reference manual for the new leader, the kind of book bosses would give to people along with the news that they were being promoted to a leadership position, the type of book a manager might turn to again and again over the next few years as they navigate the new terrain of management responsibility. With this book, The Pursuit of Excellence, my goal is to be both practical and aspirational, to dig into what excellence is, why it matters, and how to go about pursuing it. This book is for growth-oriented, hard-working people who think rigorously. It may not be for everyone. I'm often asked by colleagues, friends, podcast listeners, and clients, what are the common themes you find among the guests you speak with? What do they do? This book is my answer. There are several distinct lessons I need to share in my experiences interviewing people such as Jim Collins, Cat Cole, Dan Pink, Admiral William McCraven, Jenny Britton Bauer, George Raveling, Patrick Lencioni, Susan Cain, and hundreds of other high achievers help make that possible. Along with their invaluable insights, I draw on over two decades of my own learning by trial and error. I lay it all out on the table in both a descriptive and prescriptive manner. Over the course of this journey together, we will zoom out to the 30,000 feet view of what makes excellence and zoom in to the street level to examine the tactics, behaviors, and actions taken by noted high performers across a wide variety of domains. As you listen, you may encounter ideas that will invite you to question yourself and your beliefs. That's okay. It's part of the journey. You will also find specific actions to take, experiments to run, and tools to analyze what works best for you as you pursue your own brand of excellence. What should you continue to do, and what should you stop? Productive achievers live lives full of experiments, and I want to both inspire you and equip you to do just that. Part 1. The Build. Chapter 1. Purpose Mindset. The key to pursuing excellence is to embrace an organic, long-term learning process, and not to live in a shell of static, safe mediocrity. Usually, growth comes at the expense of previous comfort or safety. Josh Waitzkin. For the first 2.5 decades of my life, my passion and purpose were all about sports. I wanted to play football and planned to do that as my life's work. Through football, I was able to earn a full scholarship that paid for my college education and room and board. But life sometimes has a funny way of letting you know that your plans aren't going to work out. While I was passionate about earning a living as a quarterback, the key decision makers determined that I was not good enough to play in the NFL. The universe retired me from my dream, and I was forced to figure out how to find my next passion. With the help of a family friend, I landed a job in telephonic sales. It was a humbling moment. Did I grow up saying, wow, I hope I can get a job in a cubicle making 70 cold calls a day for a living? Of course not. I haven't met anyone who has. But I know a lot of people who grow up wanting to do excellent work that fulfills them. In a survey conducted by the Stanford Center on Longevity, 77% of Americans said they want to live to be at least 100 years old. While a healthy diet full of whole foods and regular exercise increase our odds, there is one key element that science shows we often overlook: finding purpose. According to the Washington Post, research reveals that people who believe their existence has meaning have lower levels of the stress hormone cortisol and more favorable gene expression related to inflammation. If a 90-year-old with a clear purpose in life develops Alzheimer's disease, that person will probably keep functioning relatively well despite real pathological changes in the brain, one study found. Another meta-analysis of 10 studies involving more than 136,000 people found that having purpose in life can lower your mortality risk by about 17%. The simple fact is that any job in any profession can do this for anyone. Find your purpose and meaning in the job you have, and excellence becomes possible. As I embarked on my new path as a telephonic sales rep, I learned that implementing a similar work ethic from my playing days to the world of professional selling would be helpful. I realized that my love for competition could still apply by competing against both my prior performance and the performance of my peers. I discovered that I enjoyed helping my customers and that I got fulfillment out of helping my teammates and my manager. Did I love the actual job? Was it my passion? Not necessarily, but there were many elements of the work that I came to love. Eventually, I became good at the job. I developed some mastery for how to do it well. I was given autonomy by my boss because of the results I produced for him and the company. I developed relationships with many coworkers who became my friends for life. I started looking forward to Monday mornings and the grind of each week. I loved that it was hard and that only a few of us could achieve the circle of excellence status that the company had established for the highest performers. I enjoyed the pursuit and the challenge to perform at higher levels. I felt fulfilled by improving my skills at something I had previously never done. The passion came after the performance. I became passionate about the work because I developed a high level of skill to do it well. And the same is true for what I do now for a living. I am immensely curious about understanding the frameworks of excellence of others. Because of that, I launched a podcast with the intent of creating a platform to enable me to have long-form conversations with fascinating people who have sustained excellence. That curiosity has driven me to work at the craft of asking thoughtful questions, developing better listening skills, and asking even better follow-up questions. My passion for this work has grown over the many years I've done it. Once I've developed a skill, it fuels my purpose and gives me more fulfillment. That drives me to work on it even more, which helps me get better over time. The improvement of my output has opened countless doors for other career and relationship opportunities. The podcast has become the basis for my full-time work. I've built a business from it. I've created products and services such as my Learning Leader Circles, which are paid mastermind groups, or the Learning Leader Academy, my online school for leaders. I now regularly give keynote speeches for a wide variety of companies and conferences, and I work with the leadership teams of those companies to help them be more effective. All these opportunities have resulted from the Learning Leader Show, and that was born out of my choice to be purposeful about my work long before I uncovered a passion for it. When asked for advice, Professor Scott Galloway said, "The worst advice given to young people is follow your passion. If someone tells you to follow your passion, that means they're already rich. Your job is to find something you're good at and then spend thousands of hours and apply the grit and the sacrifice and the willingness to break through hard things to become great at it. Because once you're great at something, the economic accoutrements of being great at something, the prestige, the relevance, the camaraderie, the self-worth of being great will make you passionate about whatever it is. Here's the problem with believing you should follow your passion. Work is hard, and when you run into obstacles and you face injustice, which is a common guaranteed attribute of the workplace, you'll start thinking, I'm not loving this. This is upsetting and hard. It must not be my passion. That is not the right litmus test. Jay-Z followed his passion and is a billionaire. Assume you are not Jay-Z. This is the same advice I received years ago from Cal Newport, author of So Good They Can't Ignore You and Deep Work. Follow your passion is bad advice for a few reasons. The first is that most people don't have a clear, predefined passion to follow. This is especially true if you consider young people who are just setting out on their own for the first time. The advice to follow your passion is frustratingly meaningless if, like many people, you don't have a passion to follow. The second reason is that we don't have much evidence that matching your job to a pre-existing interest makes you more likely to find that work satisfying. The properties we know lead people to enjoy their work, such as autonomy, mastery, and relationships, have little to do with whether or not the work matches an established inclination. It's about growth. Dr. Carol Dweck was born in New York in 1946, the middle child of three. In sixth grade, Carol and the rest of her fellow students were seated in order of their IQ. The children with the highest IQs in the class were the only ones entrusted with special classroom duties, washing the blackboard, carrying the flag, or taking a note to the principal's office for the teacher. Carol said, "On the one hand, I didn't believe that a score on a test was that important. On the other hand, every student wants to succeed in the framework that's established. So looking back, I think that glorification of IQ was a pivotal point of my development." In fact, that experience set up the trajectory of her professional scholarship decades later. For her PhD, Dweck asked children to answer a series of increasingly harder questions. Her goal was to measure how they responded to questions they eventually would get wrong. She wanted to see how they would cope with it. "I was amazed when some of the kids got excited when I gave them problems they couldn't solve. My eyes kind of bugged out. Those kids taught me something that determined the rest of my career. I wanted to figure out what kind of special sauce they had, and I wanted to bottle it. That is what I devoted my career to." Dr. Dweck would later publish her best-selling book, Mindset: The New Psychology of Success. In it, she lays out the differences between what she calls the fixed mindset, the belief that growth potential is limited by inherited traits like IQ, and the growth mindset, the belief that inherited traits merely provide the starting point for nearly limitless growth potential. Her research suggests that teachers can foster students' growth mindset by teaching them that intelligence can be developed, which helps them to embrace challenges and the rewards that come with hard work and effort, not just those that flow from their inherent intelligence. When I spoke with Dr. Dweck on my podcast...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?